Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So, stay tuned for tonight's special report on the separation of church and state right after this. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the world's most ignorant. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist these evils that they see perpetrated against our liberties, our privacy, and our property by these powerful government agencies, the multinational corporations, the lobbies, and the news media. But you know, we don't have to remain helpless. The institution designed by God and incorporated into our Constitution and Bill of Rights is called the judicial power. Now, the courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, our liberties, and our property. It's not the Congress or the political process. Now, did you know, for instance, that the privilege against self-incrimination is neither accorded to the passive resistant nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights, not to someone who is indifferent thereto? And that's because it is a fighting clause, and its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat. It cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor, and it is valid only when it is insisted upon by a belligerent claimant in person, so says United States versus Johnson. That's why I contend that we should listen more to our judges and less to our politicians and lawyers. Now, did you hear what that judge said in that statement? He said, "Your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor. Your rights can only be claimed by you, the belligerent claimant, in person." Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. And remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and it's free of charge. Now, our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on to our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. We are reviewing a book called The Ten Commandments. It's called The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on American Law. We have a principle of law here in the United States, for instance, that says, at the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. Now, that's a direct citation from Deuteronomy 19, verse 15. You can't convict somebody in this country unless you've got two witnesses to present against him. And that principle of law comes from God through Moses in Deuteronomy 19. That's not the only one. There are 21 of those principles of law, 22 in fact, 22 principles of law contained in our federal Constitution that are taken directly out of the Ten Commandments or the statutes, judgments, and the penalties that we see in Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. So, law here in the United States comes from the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. Want to know something else? You Australians down there in the Australia, New Zealand, same thing. Same thing in Canada, you people up there in Canada, all you Western Europeans. If you take a look in your historical documents, you're going to find the Ten Commandments in there. In this country, in the United States, we really are nutso. Our original 13 colonies adopted the Ten Commandments as a part of their constitution and their laws. Constitution and or their laws. All except Rhode Island, they only adopted 6 of the 10. First 4 they didn't adopt for some reason. I guess they wanted to have separation of church and state with those 4, I guess. Huh? Now, in addition to that, the states that came into the Union in later years also did the same thing, just not to the same degree. But all of the Ten Commandments are incorporated in some or all of the laws of the United States in every state in the Union. We've got 50 sovereign independent countries here in this Union called the United States of America. And each one of these foreign countries that we call a state here, under the law of nations, would be a sovereign independent nation. And they all adopted, they're all Anglo-Saxon in their origin. They're not Anglo-Saxon anymore. California and Texas are now minority states. The Anglo-Saxons are no longer the majority in 2 of the biggest states in our country. The stranger that is within us has now risen up high above us and is in the process of bringing us down very low. And as I pointed out in the last program, I said, we are going into national captivity. And we're going into national captivity because of Sabbath breaking. That's right, Sabbath breaking. Now, there was a time here in the United States when we practiced the Sabbath. Can you believe that? I'm not whistling Dixie. This was in full force and effect when I was a child. I lived in a little town called Corbell, California, 17 miles northeast of Eureka. And in this little town, it was a mill town. I don't believe there was a church there. I know Mrs. Fernleaf used to hold church services down at the general store, in an upstairs room over the general store called Brizard's. But if you wanted to go to church, you'd have to go to Blue Lake. And so you'd walk. It's a mile and a half. Or if you were going to drive your car, you had to have gas in your car because you could not buy gasoline on Sunday. If you worked in the woods, you had to have some food stashed for Sunday if you wanted to eat because the cookhouse was closed. If you were looking to work on Sunday, the mill was closed. This is during World War II. If you would have seen or thought of a time when you would have thought that there was an oxen ditch and we ought to be working on Saturday, or on Sunday, rather, Sunday, it would have been during World War II, don't you think? When I was a kid, the world stopped Saturday night. I mean, it just stopped. You couldn't buy gas. You couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't. No stores were open. Nothing was open. When I say nothing, I mean nothing. Zero. Now, you could go to church. You didn't have to, but if you wanted to go anywhere, you were going to go to church. And if you were going to go to church, why? Churches were open. Now, let me tell you a little something about that. That didn't come about by accident. There's a commandment here that says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shall you labor and do all of your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your cattle, nor any stranger that's within your gates. Because in 6 days the Eternal made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day, and he hallowed it. You'll find that in Exodus 20, verses 8 through 11, and Deuteronomy 5, verses 12 through 15. Now, Noah Webster, in his original 1828 Dictionary of the English Language, gave the following definitions. Sabbath, it's a noun. The day which God appointed to be observed by the Jews as a day of rest from all secular labor or employments, and to be kept holy, and consecrated to his service and worship. This was originally the seventh day of the week, the day on which God rested from the work of creation, and this day is still observed by the Jews and some Christians as the Sabbath, but the Christian church very early begun and still continues to observe the first day of the week in commemoration of the resurrection of Christ on that day, by which the work of redemption was completed. Hence it's often called the Lord's Day. The heathen nations in the north of Europe dedicated this day to the sun, and hence their Christian descendants continue to call the day Sunday. But in the United States, Christians have, to a great extent, discarded the heathen name and adopted the Jewish name Sabbath. Intermission of pain or sorrow, time of rest, peaceful, sleep out the Sabbath of the tomb. The sabbatical year among the Israelites in Leviticus 25. Then he's got Sabbath breaker, Sabbath breaking, and so on. Now, in the United States, in our early colonial laws, articles, laws and order, divine, politic, and martial for the colony of Virginia. And he goes through here, there's a number of other colonies over here that are identified here. They made the Sabbath day as a matter of law in the colonies. And it was Sunday, the Sabbath. And boys and girls, that's not separation of church and state. I mean, you could go to whatever church you wanted to, but by God, you ain't working on Sunday. And if they caught you with your store open or your business open, they'd rack you. Now, God would take you out and stone you to death. We never applied capital punishment to Sabbath breaking. But we did create laws, statutes, rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices here in all of the colonies, in all of the states, recognizing the Sabbath until about 1950. Now, we call those the Sunday Blue Laws. Sunday Blue Laws. In fact, in 1923, the Jews sued, and they said, we've got discrimination going on here in the United States. You see, we keep the Sabbath on Saturday, and you Christians keep the Sabbath on Sunday. As a result of that, we cannot open our stores on the Sabbath because God has forbidden it. And now we can't open our stores on Sunday because the state prohibits it. So you should rule in our favor, and you should let us close our stores on Saturday and open on Sunday. Went clear to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court came back and said, not by the hair on your chinny chin chin. Boys and girls, this is not separation of church and state. This is the law of God being enforced by the state. That's what was intended by our founding fathers. The intention of Thomas Jefferson wasn't to prohibit government from enforcing the law of God. It was to prohibit government from imposing upon the church the law of the state, which is precisely what they have done. So if you think the ACLU is your friend and they're out there protecting you against the state, no. Wake up and smell the coffee here. What they've done is they've induced the church to join the state as 501c3 tax-exempt institutions, giving the state the power to regulate and control them. That's why I mentioned here the other day, I said, now, that's why you Mormons can't practice polygamy. That's because you're practicing the law of the state. got a state marriage license. You practice the Ten Commandments and the law of God, and you can practice polygamy all day long. Nobody in this country is concerned about you having two women over here that you're having sexual relations with. They're just objecting to you having marriage licenses with them. Now, you could have a common law marriage, you could have a patriarchal marriage, but you can't have a civil law marriage. And that's what you people are engaged in. And I'm not telling you to change, I'm just telling you that, you know, if that's what you want to do, get after it. But I have people calling me all the time saying, "Why, that dirty government, why, they're over there interfering in our religious beliefs." No, they're not. Now, you joined the state. You know, if you want to join the state, you know, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. That's what the Messiah told you. Now, if you don't want to pay taxes, then get rid of your Social Security number. That's the place to start. That isn't the last word on it, but that's the place to start. Now, the Sabbath day has been recognized in the United States Constitution under Article 1, Section 7, Paragraph 2, which speaks in part, "If any bill shall not be returned by the President within 10 days, Sundays excepted, after it shall have been presented to him, the same shall be a law." So right there in our Constitution is Sunday Sabbath observance. That's in our U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 7, Paragraph 2. Remember I told you? We got 22 places here in our Constitution where we observe these commandments, statutes, judgments, and etc. The Missouri Supreme Court observed the following. It is provided that if the governor does not return a bill within 10 days, Sundays excepted, it shall become law without his signature. I'm going to underline that, Sundays excepted. So here's another state that wrote the Sabbath into their state constitution. Although it may be said that this provision leaves it optional with the governor whether he will consider bills or not on Sunday, yet regard being had to the circumstances under which it was inserted, can any impartial mind deny that it contains a recognition of the Lord's Day as a day exempted by law from all worldly pursuits? Now, the framers of our Constitution then recognized Sunday as a day to be observed, acting themselves under a law which exacted a compulsive observance of it. If a compulsive observance of the Lord's Day as a day of rest had been deemed inconsistent with the principles contained in the Constitution, can anything be clearer than as the matter was so plainly and palpably before the convention, a specific condemnation of the Sunday law would have been engrafted upon it? So far from it, Sunday was recognized as a day of rest. Now, the Supreme Court ruled that Sunday closing laws are constitutional. See McGowan v. Maryland, 366 U.S. 420 in 1961. And these laws originate from the Fourth Commandment, as the Pennsylvania Supreme Court stated. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shall you labor and do all of your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Eternal your God. And in it you shall not do any work. This divine pronouncement became part of the common law inherited by the 13 American colonies and by the sovereign states of the American Union. Always underline that word common law. That's the law of the commoners. That's the law that came from Moses at Mount Sinai. That's our law. Then there's the king's law. The king's law. That's what we're practicing today, the king's law, and that's why the king regulates and controls us. We volunteered for it. Hey, that's what we wanted to do, and we have a choice to make, and God told us to make a choice. And we did. Now there's an outcome coming. So as a reporter, I just wanted to report to you that, hey, wake up here, let's all of us smell the coffee, because we're all in for an ass-kicking, all of us. And it's time to recognize that, and maybe, just maybe, you can obviate some I wouldn't say all, but some of that punishment if we turn around and start practicing the law. Now, we got a contract here. And our problem here in the United States is called breach of contract. Now, I would submit that the rest of you people in the world have the same problem. It's breach of contract. But particularly here in the United States, because that's where I live, that's the law that we're talking about here, I cannot tell you that the Ten Commandments is a part of the law of Singapore, Hong Kong, China, Russia, or Brazil. I don't know that. But now, in places like Pakistan and India, where you people have been under the direct colonial influence of Great Britain, just like the United States was under the direct colonial influence of Great Britain, our laws come from Great Britain. And where did the British get their laws? They got it from Moses. They got it from Blackstone's commentaries. And those early English writers got their law from the Ten Commandments. Those judges, those kings over there. Now, of course, there were some kings over there that were good, some pretty poor. Some of them were Catholic, some of them were Protestant. Not all of them practiced the law. Here you can see we've changed the Sabbath from Saturday to Sunday, and we evidently thought that we had the authority or the power to do it. And my point isn't here to tell you which day the Sabbath is or you're keeping it on the wrong day of the week. I'm pointing out, boys and girls, when we kept Sunday as the Sabbath, even though it was incorrect, evidently God honored it because we became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world as a result of it. You can't deny that the United States of America leapfrogged ahead of you Englishmen over there. I mean, hell, you know, we were 13 backward third world nations over here in 1776. By 1876, you Englishmen over there were just about on a par with the United States. We were the emerging power. By 1900, we had eclipsed Great Britain, keeping Sunday. So I would say that even though it's the wrong day of the week, the Jews have it correct. It's Sabbath. Even Webster's dictionary tells you, you know, that Sabbath is the seventh day of creation. Look on your calendar. Can you see 7 on there? Count across there. Sunday's the first day of the week. Saturday's the 7th. But in spite of that, you'll see that America prospered. Well, for that matter, so did all the Israelite nations. So, evidently, God did not get after us for that change. And the change evidently was honored by him. He didn't punish us. I don't think our problem is getting punished for practicing Saturday or Sunday. I think our punishment for Sabbath breaking is coming up because we've got all of our stores open like slot machines in a Harrah's casino. We stopped keeping the Sabbath, period, about 1950 in this country. Now, there's going to be a conclusion that comes from that. I don't think we're going to get away with that. Now, you can just, you know, put that down on your calendar and then just keep watching. And don't get antsy now if it doesn't happen next week. The Apostle Peter made an observation, you know. He said, you know, and then the skeptics will come along and say, hey, where's the promise of his coming? We've heard this crap now since the fathers fell asleep. And it takes a long time for geopolitical events to work themselves out. Rome wasn't destroyed overnight. It took several hundred years. The United States of America isn't going to disappear overnight. But it's going to disappear. The political institution that you see here in the United States, take this one to the bank, is going to disappear. How do I know that? It isn't because I'm Gene Dixon and I'm a great prophet. And I'm telling you that, that's because that's what God himself told you. The punishment. If you want to know what the penalty is for a national Sabbath breaking, it's national captivity. That's the penalty. So Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and the United States, you know, wake up and smell the coffee. Here's where it's coming. Now, the Supreme Court ruled that Sunday closing laws are constitutional. Just remember that. And the Fourth Commandment remains part of American law. Many states have recognized the Sabbath as influencing in their civil process. For example, an 1830 New York law declared that civil process cannot by statute be executed on Sunday, and a service of such process on Sunday is utterly void and subjects the officer to damages. Any officer serving process on Sunday could be sued and damages collected. You believe that? I mean, you wouldn't dare do that in New York State today, but I wanted to point out, I'm not sitting here saying to you now, let's vote so-and-so in and let's return America to a Christian nation. That'll be a cold day in hell. Wake up. But there's going to be an outcome from our wanton perversion of the Ten Commandments, and with particularity the Sabbath commandment. And I say with particularity. This is the big one. This is the grand poobah of commandments. This is the one that affects everybody, every time, without exception. When you have a foreign army come in like you Germans had in 1945, when the Russians are coming in from the east and the Americans and the British from the west, that's curtains, isn't it? Now all you Germans are still living over there and living your lives and doing your thing. And as long as you do what the Americans and the British and the United Nations tell you, you'll be all right. Just sit down, shut up, and do what you're told. You'll be all right. Now, how do you think that's going to fly here in America when the Russians and the Chinese say, hey, you Americans, just sit down, shut up, and do what you're told. Everything will be all right. How about that in Australia when the Chinese come in and tell you people, sit down, shut up. Everything's going to be fine. And that isn't going to sit well, and you're not going to like it. Now, there's some exceptions to this rule. People that actually practice these Ten Commandments don't go into national captivity. Isn't that just special? You'll see that in Revelation 3, verse 10. Write that one down. Revelation 3, verse 10. One more. Write down Ezekiel chapter 18. Pay attention to that whole chapter there that deals with crime and punishment. When you get to the end of it, it'll tell you the answer. If you're practicing the law, you will not be punished. Take a look at Sodom and Gomorrah. You only had three people in the city that could do what they were told. And those three people escaped from the city and lived to be a ripe old age and die of old age. Everybody else in the city died a violent death. There's another example. The Bible is full of examples. And so pay attention now. If you want to live, practice the Ten Commandments. If you want to die, go practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Now there's a couple, three more. The founders over here, James Warren. He was born in 1726, died in 1808. He was the president of the Massachusetts Provincial Congress. Following Joseph Warren's death, he was a major general in the provincial militia. He was a member of the Navy Board for the Eastern Department, a member of the Governor's Council, 1792 to 94. He was a presidential elector from Massachusetts in 1804. He was married to Mercy Otis Warren. He was 1724 to 1814. Now, a remarkable author of the Revolutionary period whose correspondence with numerous founding fathers has granted invaluable insight into our nation's history. In 1805, she wrote The History of the Rise, Progress, and Termination of the American Revolution in three volumes. Well, it was James Warren who first proposed the committees of correspondence to Samuel Adams, which were of great influence in inspiring the spirit of freedom among the colonies. On June 16, 1775, President James Warren and the Massachusetts Provincial Congress resolved. In Provincial Congress, Watertown, June 16, 1775. Quote, as it has pleased Almighty God in His providence, providence to suffer the calamities of an unnatural war to take place among us, in consequence of our sinful declensions, D-E-C-L-E-N-S-I-O-N-S, whatever that word means, from him, and our great abuse of those inestimable blessings bestowed upon us. And as we have reason to fear that unless we become a penitent and reformed people, we shall feel still severer tokens of his displeasure. And as the most effectual way to escape those desolating judgments which so evidently hang over us, and if it may be obtained, the restoration of our former tranquility will be that we repent and return everyone from his iniquities unto him that correcteth us, which if we do in sincerity and truth, we have no reason to doubt. But he will remove his judgments, cause our enemies to be at peace with us, and prosper the work of our hands. Hey, can you imagine Nancy Pelosi standing up in the House of Representatives and making a statement like that? Harry Reid, Barack Obama, Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller. You know, your leaders, your princes that lead you. See, this is one of the founding fathers of the founding fathers, James Warren. You probably never heard his name. I hadn't paid much attention to it. I probably saw his name. It's probably on the Declaration of Independence of the Constitution. But he was the president of Massachusetts Provincial Congress. He was one of the founding fathers. And he wrote a lot of correspondence to and received a lot of correspondence from. And you'll find his correspondence in our national archives. Can you imagine one of our leaders today making those kinds of statements? That's why I said, wait a minute, these guys aren't trying to edit out the Ten Commandments, prayer, God, or the Bible from our secular institutions. They're not trying to write that out of our laws and our constitutions. The ACLU is. The Illuminati is doing that. The Learned Elders of Zion, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, and the Council on Foreign Relations, yeah, they're all doing that. They have already done it. They've already succeeded. But that wasn't what we inherited from our founding fathers. We inherited God, prayer, the Ten Commandments, and the Bible in our state constitutions, in our federal constitutions, in our writings, our correspondence, our founding fathers. We practiced it, then we prospered from it. Now take a look at our prosperity here today, now that we gave up God, prayer, the Ten Commandments, and the Bible, and ask yourself, how do you like the results of that? And if you're sitting out there saying, I don't believe it for a minute, we'll just keep on doing what we're doing, well, keep after it, partner. If you're satisfied with the status quo that you see today with 4 million foreclosures on your homes, you have succeeded, partner. You've arrived. If you think that 14 million unemployed in the United States is success, you want to stick with the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. By God, that's provided for us the greatest success story in the history of our nation. Now, we've got greater successes coming. The unemployment rate in the United States now is 28%. That's 3 percentage points higher than it was in 1933. Now, that's by poll. That's not what you're getting from your government. So your government's still telling us 9.5%. And that's true. They're not lying to you. It is 9.5%. When you measure just the people drawing unemployment insurance every week, it's 9.5%. And then the day that you quit drawing your unemployment insurance, they drop you from the rolls. You're no longer unemployed, whether you got a job or not. You're no longer counted as unemployed. Now, isn't that just special? I would suggest to you that our Congress, that our Department of Labor, that our President, we need the Ten Commandments and the Bible in those institutions. I mean, they're liars. They're bearing false witness. They're putting out reports that are supposed to be true, accurate, and correct, and they're lies. Well, you know, they're not actually lying to you. They're just not telling you the whole truth. They're just kind of like Satan. You know, he didn't lie to Eve when he said, in the day that you eat thereof, you won't die. He just didn't go on to explain that, well, it won't be on June 18th, but it'll be about 930 years from now. That's the way that game is played. Halfway time here, boys and girls. Let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log, schedule, and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, then click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Now, remember a little earlier I mentioned to you that at the mouth of two witnesses or three witnesses shall the matter be established. Now, I brought up a subject here, and I said, I don't believe that Thomas Jefferson, in his letter to the Baptists in Connecticut, called the Wall of Separation letter, intended for religion, the Ten Commandments, prayer, God, and the Bible to be excluded from our secular governmental institutions. I believe that Thomas Jefferson intended that the governmental institutions be separated from our religious institutions. Now, the only evidence that the ACLU has ever brought forward in their claim that the secular government needs to be separated from religion is Jefferson's letter. And I said, okay, well then, why don't you bring forth your proofs, and why don't you bring forth your witnesses? And they've got one witness, Thomas Jefferson, that I contend is being cited off point and out of context. Now, I have brought forth numerous witnesses that have all testified that the Ten Commandments, God, prayer, and the Bible belong in our public institutions. Numerous witnesses, and I'm going to bring forth some more. George Washington in 1751 accompanied his older brother Lawrence Washington, who on the advice of physicians spent the winter in the West Indies in a desperate attempt to regain his health. The illness, nevertheless, grew worse, and before he died, Lawrence left his estate at Mount Vernon to George. And in his journal of the trip, George entered, Sunday, November the 11th, dressed in order for church, but got to town too late, dined at Major Clark's, went to evening service, and then returned to our lodging. On Sunday, November the 8th, 1789, while in Connecticut, President Washington entered in his diary, "It being contrary to law and disagreeable to the people of this state to travel on the Sabbath day, and my horses, after passing through such intolerable roads, wanting to rest, I stayed at Perkins Tavern, which, by the by, is not a good one, all day, and a meeting house being within a few rods of the door, I attended morning and evening service, and heard very lame discourses from a Mr. Pond, Reverend Enoch Pond." Now, let me pause here and make an editorial comment. Here's our first president of the United States, went to church, and he said, "I heard some very lame discourses from the preacher." All right, but you'll notice here that the President of the United States kept the Sabbath. Our President doesn't do that. He works on Sunday. And he sets a bad example for everybody else in the country. Your public officials need to set the example for the rest of us to follow. That's the purpose for leadership. When our public leaders, when our public officials break the laws of God, they set us an example that we too have permission to violate these laws. Now, that's not the case, and there's a result that comes from that, but that result occurs years and years after the initial event. So, as we progress through our history, that's his story. Just break it down. His story, the story of man. As we break it down, we find in times past a result that comes from Sabbath breaking. We find it in the Bible. We find it in secular history. What happened to the Roman Empire? And I know somebody's going to write me a letter and say, "Well, how do you know that the Roman Empire was destroyed because they didn't keep the Sabbath?" Because that's what God revealed in the Bible happens to all the great empires that don't follow His laws. He destroys them. Sends them into national captivity. And somebody says, "Well, I don't believe that." Your belief, partner, doesn't make it true or false. Well, neither does yours. I never claimed that it did. I'm a reporter. I'm just here to deliver information. I got a special position here, partner. Now, I'm not getting out of this any cheaper than anybody else. I didn't come on the air here and say, "Hey, I'm doing everything right and I'm going to get away with it." I said, "We're all in for an ass-kicking. And I just thought I'd report it to you. I'll get mine. Just be patient." I have enemies, and they're all sitting over here jumping up and down waiting to dance on my grave. Hang on. Be patient. If I'm doing the law, and if I'm performing on it correctly, there isn't anything that you can do to me. You can't get to me. God will always protect me. And if you don't think so, go back and read Daniel in the lion's den. He had some enemies, and they thought that they were going to get to him. They didn't. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace. They had enemies. and they thought they were going to get to them. They didn't. And so sit back and relax. Everybody that practices this law and is going to live through this, everybody that's in violation of this law is going to be punished. You may live through it, because in the final analysis, God himself says he's going to save 10% of the people on planet Earth alive for breeding stock. So you could just take 10% of the people in Afghanistan and 10% of the people in Soviet Georgia and 10% of the people in France and so on down the line. I'm not suggesting that everybody's going to get killed, but your chances of survival are 9 to 1. Well, it's 9 out of 10, 10 to 1. Those aren't good odds. So that's why I thought I would deliver this discourse to you. George Washington, first president of the United States, kept the Sabbath. He kept it on Sunday. And you know, you Sabbath keepers are going to say, well, he kept it on Sunday. Well, okay. So he kept it on the wrong day of the week, but he was keeping the Sabbath, wasn't he? And I would contend he got away with it. Now, he didn't live to be 70. He died when he was 68. He didn't collect his 70. He should have. He didn't. Now, Ben Franklin did. Ben got his 70. I don't know how much better Ben practiced the law than George Washington. George seemed to have done a pretty good job. But I can tell you this. He didn't practice it well enough to collect his 25,550 days. Ben Franklin did. There was some kind of a difference there. Hey, let me flip over here to another chapter here in the book. I think it's just a short chapter here. It deals with rewards and punishments. Since I measured, I mentioned to you, I said, hey, you know, we're in for an ass-kicking here. Let's see if I can identify. Yeah, here's future rewards and punishments. Yeah, it's about 10 pages. Listen to this. He said, an integral yet easily overlooked aspect of how the Ten Commandments indirectly influenced our democratic form of government is the underlying concept that these laws should be obeyed because, as our founders referred to it, there would be a future state of rewards and punishments. And this is key to the experiment of self-government, as to believe in such a future state resulted in one acting with internal restraint, requiring less external restraint from the government. Now, that's an important principle of law. I think it was Thomas Paine that said, if it wasn't him, he was reiterating it. He said, he who is governed best is governed least. I don't know if he originated that thought, but he expounded on it a couple of times. He who is governed best is governed least. And that's caused by an internal restraint. Internal restraint. The Ten Commandments is an internal restraint upon your conduct. It says you shall do no murder because there's a future punishment coming to all murderers. No murderer has eternal life abiding in him. Well, you know, most of you people out there, whether you're a Mormon or a Catholic, a Baptist or whatever, you're looking forward to some kind of a future reward. And you're trying to avoid some future punishment. You know, if you've been raised like I was, you know, in some kind of a church or some kind of a moral atmosphere at home and home life. So as a result of that, we sit back and we say to ourselves, well, I don't like that guy and I'd like to kill him, but I'm not going to kill him because I'm afraid of what God might do to me in the judgment. And that's what keeps most of us from killing people. Now, on the other hand, you got murderers out there. They obviously do not have that inner restraint. Theft is another clear and concise punishment problem here. Listen to this. In the year 2012, I'm going to send out a series of letters to people that owe me money. And I haven't sent them any letters. I haven't sued them at the law. You know, the guy owes me money. I don't sue him at the law. and I extended to him credit. And so as a result of that, in the year 2012, which is called the year of release, I send these guys a letter and I say, hey, you owe me this money, you didn't pay me. And then as a result of that, I'm going to forgive you the debt. How do you like that? I'm going to forgive you the debt. How would you like me to send you a letter and say, hey, if you don't pay me what you owe me, I'm going to forgive you? Well, now, as a result of that, do you think I'm doing you a favor? Well, I want to tell you that I'm not, because there's a thing here called the year of release. So if we have an open line of credit, you know, something that's not done under contract, with specified times, you know, that we have an open line of credit, and you don't pay me. And this typically occurs when I give some guy an open line of credit on a school. And I tell him very plainly, I said, now, you know, there's 7 years in this cycle. And in the first year, you've got to pay me within the 7 years. In the second year, it's within 6 years. In 3 years, it's within 4 years, and so on down the line. And finally, we get to the year 2012, and I send him a letter, and I say, you know, you got to pay me before Passover 2013 be the deadline. And if you don't pay me, I'm going to forgive you the debt. If, for instance, you could have paid me, but you didn't, what happens is that is then converted to a theft, and Big Mike is going to execute judgment. And that's because the Ten Commandments are enforced by angels. They're not enforced by the highway patrol or your local sheriff. And those are laws, and they're real laws, and if you violate those laws, then you have to pay a penalty for them. There's no escape. There's no getting away. It'll be exacted. So, it is true I won't get my money, but it's comparably true that you're not going to benefit from it. And the reason is because if you could have paid me and you didn't, it's converted to a theft, and you pay five times the amount of the theft. That's why you lost your job. That's why you lost your house. That's why a tornado came through and knocked it all down. That's why you got cancer. That's why you're suffering. Boys and girls, there isn't any such thing on this planet Earth as a crime without a punishment. You cannot have a law without a penalty. If you could, it wouldn't be a law, it would be a suggestion. These aren't suggestions. When your God said to you, don't forget my covenant, what he's saying is, hey, don't forget our contract. We have a deal, and I'm going to hold you to it. And if you don't pay me, then I'm going to come and collect it. And this is the guy that's got a collection service like you ain't never heard of before. They're called angels. One of them's name is Big Mike. Now, when we talk about future rewards and punishments, then what we're dealing with here is the period of time that God calls the judgment. This judgment occurs every 7 years. It also occurs once every 50 years. You can have a year of release, and then you can have a jubilee. Now, the year of release will be in 2012, the jubilee in 2013. And as a result of that, there's going to be some judgments. They're going to come down on us. Now, I'm not a prophet. I'm not a priest. I'm not a pastor. And I'm not a pope. And I don't make any claims to any kind of ecumenical powers. Do not send your tithes to Post Office Box 297. You know, there are people that do collect tithes, and I'm not one of them. And I'm not here to ask you to send me your money, nor to support this work. I don't need that. I've got a job to do, and I go out and I do it every day. And then I'm a reporter, and I come here and I report facts. And the facts that I'm reporting here is that this concept here in the United States of America of separation of church and state is a deception. It's a lying deception, and it's going to have an outcome, and a lot of us are going to get hurt real bad as a result of it. So if you want to avoid that hurt, then you have to stop doing that act. If you've been out here raping, robbing, and pillaging, you know, it's just a matter of time until somebody's going to catch up with you. So you want to stop doing that just as rapidly as possible. And as it relates now to this thing of future rewards and punishments, our founding fathers believed that. They were divided up into a lot of churches. And as we read through, you know, Thomas Jefferson was a deist. And Ben Franklin, I don't know what he said, that he was a Presbyterian when he was a young man. He changed from that. He wasn't a Presbyterian when he died. But he's got a lot of statements in here that we're going to see. You know, old Ben Franklin, he was not a lawless fellow. He was not some guy out here advocating separation of church and state. He never advocated taking the Bible out of the Congress or taking the Ten Commandments out of our state and federal constitutions. He never advocated for getting our contract or our covenant with our God. And neither did any of these other founding fathers, which is my point. If Thomas Jefferson was an advocate of that kind of anarchy, he was by himself. He's the only guy that advocated the separation of God, prayer, the Ten Commandments, and the Bible from our government and our public institutions. No other founding father ever uttered such nonsense. And I'm contending that Thomas Jefferson didn't either. And you can get his letter now from www.usconstitution.net. And just type in there Jefferson's Wall of Separation letter and read it for yourself. Now, I know the ACLU has come along and said Thomas Jefferson advocated a wall of separation between church and state. We've got to get the Ten Commandments and God and prayer out of our public schools and out of our Congress and out of our public institutions and our courthouses. And that's just poppycock. In fact, it's not only a lie, it is a damn lie. Now, it doesn't say to us that it's going to change anything, but I'm going to make the report. I'm going to tell you that Thomas Jefferson didn't say that. That is not Thomas Jefferson there that's coming along here saying, let's get rid of God, prayer, the Ten Commandments, and the Bible. That's what's happened. And that's what they've said should happen because of his letter, but that's not what he said. That's not what his intent was. And no other founding father ever uttered such nonsense either. And if that's what he meant, then he's the only one out of 56 signers to our Declaration of Independence. He's the only one that would utter that kind of poppycock. And then I'm contending he didn't utter that kind of poppycock. That kind of poppycock comes from the ACLU and Nancy Pelosi and the secret organizations, the secret societies. Hey, I'm out of time here again, boys and girls, so I'm going to have to remind you here that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, I'm out of time. I got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.